Hi, everyone. Before we start, this is the most difficult episode in the entire season from a courtroom perspective. As you know, Ava's death is based on that of Marilyn Monroe's. We've set up the discovery of the body, the circumstances between discovery of the body and calling authorities. We're going to discuss motive. These storylines can be easily grasped. But today's episode explores the medical testimony. And it's frustrating. It's hard. It's contradictory. I won't pretend it's not, because I've been frustrated by it for 15 years. The following episode is a portrayal of the way conflicting medical evidence is presented to jurors. How are they supposed to think and feel when bona fide expert witnesses tell them contradictory things? And remember, the testimony you're about to hear has been reported by real experts in the real death of Marilyn Monroe. All of these opinions, all of these assessments, they come from a genuine place. And they're still convoluted. So if you can understand what's happened by what you're hearing, if the jurors can understand what's happening by what they're hearing, you've all got one up on me. The murder of Ava Michaels comes down to the question, suicide or murder? Neither the defense nor the prosecution dispute the fact that Ava Michaels died of a barbiturate overdose. But by what method did she overdose? The defense maintains that Ava swallowed the contents of her bottles of pills, bottles that were left empty on her nightstand. The prosecution maintains that Ruth Ivanov administered a lethal enema to Ava Michaels on the direction of Dr. Stowe. So the ultimate question becomes, how did the drugs get into Ava's system?
My name is Dr. Salomon. I was the coroner appointed to the Michaels case.
Dr. Salome, you conducted the autopsy on Ava Michaels?
Yes.
Could you please tell the jury, how did you begin the autopsy on Ms. Michaels?
After reading the report and taking the subject's measurements, I studied the epidermis for signs of needle marks.
Uh-huh. Did you find any?
No.
Well, then, did you conclude then that Ms. Michaels had not been injected prior to her death?
That's correct. I did note there was some slight bruising above the left hip and lower left side of the back.
Uh-huh. Did that suggest violence?
It did not. The slight size of the bruise ruled against violence and was consistent with a minor incident, such as bumping into a table. Mm.
In your work, did you supply anything to the toxicologist for testing?
Yes. I sent the blood, liver, kidney, stomach and contents, urine and intestine to the head toxicologist for review.
And were they all reviewed?
Actually, no. The toxicology tests were only performed on the blood and the liver.
Why?
I wish I could tell you.
Okay. And what did those toxicology tests reveal?
They revealed that Mrs. Michaels' blood concentration of xylitol was 4.5 milligram per cent. This converts to 45 parts per million, which is almost four times the toxic level and three times the minimum amount it takes for death to occur. The blood test also revealed 8 milligram per cent of salicylic hydrate, which is roughly 80% of the lethal dose of that drug.
So Ava had three times the lethal amount of xylitol in her system?
Yes.
And almost the lethal amount of a second drug, salicin hydrate?
Yes.
Okay. After viewing these reports, what did you find to be the cause of her death?
Acute barbiturate poisoning.
I see. What did you check as the manner of death on the report you filed on August 5th?
Probable suicide.
Thank you. Is it true in a statement to the press your boss, the The head coroner stated that Ava Michaels was estimated to have swallowed 17 pills of salicin hydrate and 47 pills of Rylatol?
Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Salome, what does the manner of death state now?
Undetermined.
Why did it change?
I learned more information regarding the circumstances surrounding Ava Michaels' death.
Such as?
I was originally informed that Ava Michaels was alone in a locked room. I was not informed there was another person in the house or that there was another entry to the room, the broken window, at the time police arrived. I was informed Ava Michaels had a history of suicide attempts. I was not informed that the parties who found her waited 3 hours to contact authorities.
You were informed prior to conducting the autopsy that Ava Michaels had a history of suicidal attempts?
Yes, it was in her file.
Are you the one who selected the finding probable suicide?
No, that was my boss. I submitted my medical findings from the autopsy along with the toxicology report, and he issued the probable suicide finding. I signed off on it. It seemed in line with what we were seeing. When investigators came to us later and gave us more information, our office felt compelled to change its finding.
Did you personally feel compelled to change its finding?
Yes.
Was there any medical finding that gave you reason to believe that oral ingestion of over 60 pills was unlikely?
The examination of the subject's stomach contents made me consider oral ingestion at least a questionable method of entry.
How so?
The stomach was empty. I was able to withdraw 20 cc's of fluid from the stomach for analysis. There were no partially digested or undigested pills in the stomach fluid. The chemical makeup of barbiturates is crystalline. There were no crystals found in the stomach fluid. There was nothing in the stomach or in the fluid to definitely point to oral ingestion.
Is it possible the barbiturates were fully absorbed by that time and so completely gone? All traces gone?
It is possible, but the levels of barbiturates in her system were so high, almost four times the lethal dose of Rylatol, I wouldn't expect her to fully absorb every pill prior to death. I would expect death to occur while the body was still absorbing the barbiturates. At the time of death, peristalsis stops. The body does not continue digesting after death. So whatever pills are unabsorbed at the time of death should be present in the GI tract. I was unable to find any.
Dr. Salome, what is petechial hemorrhaging?
Petechial hemorrhaging is small red or purple spots caused by bleeding from broken capillaries.
I see. Did you identify this during the autopsy?
Yes. Underneath the stomach lining, or mucosa, I observed the widespread pinpoint hemorrhaging, sort of a raw red visual appearance.
Mm-hmm. Is this consistent with an oral overdose?
Yes, it's consistent.
Let's talk about petechial hemorrhaging, Dr. Salome. You said that an oral overdose of barbiturates could cause this type of hemorrhaging. Are there other causes that would result in petechial hemorrhaging?
Certainly.
I see. Is one of these causes overuse or chronic use of alcohol?
Yes, that could cause petechial hemorrhaging.
Okay. How would alcohol cause petechial hemorrhaging in a person's stomach?
Over time, alcohol wears down on the protective mucosal layer of the stomach, exposing the stomach lining to the acid, which then causes the breakdown and exposure of blood vessels, which can bleed.
So if a person was a chronic drinker, you'd expect to find petechial hemorrhaging in their stomach?
I would not be surprised to find it.
Thank you. Thank you, doctor. No further questions.
The prosecution called a rebuttal witness to testify about toxicology protocol, specifically the question of why the blood and liver were the only samples tested.
We don't test every organ, every tissue, every fluid submitted to us for every kind of substance. That's not the way this works. Our toxicology department was made aware of the drugs missing from Ava Michael's bedside table, and we received a variety of samples from the coroner's office. We tested her blood and liver to understand the content of those specific drugs in her system. We found the answer. If we hadn't found a positive result, we would have kept testing, but that was unnecessary. When the cause and manner of death were established, the case was closed. The samples were discarded. We do not have the resources to preserve every sample from every subject we autopsy. Ava Michaels died of acute barbiturate poisoning. Her toxicology report confirmed that. There was no malfeasance here.
The defense called another medical expert to testify on these events, Ava Michaels' personal physician, Dr. Carroll.
Let me break this down. There were two kinds of barbiturates found in Ava Michaels' system, xylitol and salicylic hydrate. Xylitol is the drug that killed her. The amount of salicylic hydrate in her system had not yet reached the lethal dose. However, this isn't to say having additional barbiturates in her system suppressing her central nervous system didn't make things easier for the xylitol to do its job.
Dr. Carroll, would a habitual drug user and a non-habitual drug user metabolize drugs in the same way?
No. A habitual drug user would metabolize drugs much quicker than a non-user.
Mm-hmm. It is possible, then, that no partially digested capsules were found in the stomach because of, well, Ava's habitual use, that she metabolized them so quickly that they were fully absorbed when death occurred.
Yes, it is possible for a habitual user like Ava to process the pills before time of death.
Okay, Dr. Carroll, how do you account for the lack of crystalline molecules found in Ava Michael's stomach fluid?
I am not a molecular scientist and can't speak to that.
I was initially having a bad day when I received my FabFitFun box in the mail, and then when I opened it, it completely turned my mood around in a way that I remember so clearly and I'm grateful for and still appreciate. FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box that delivers full-size fashion, beauty, home, fitness, and wellness products. It's delivered 4 times a year, and the fall box is now on presale. There's something so uniquely fun about opening a box of presents meant for you. And I've realized it's a feeling I haven't had since I was a kid, opening a box like that. But it's so nice because what's inside are these glamorous, high-quality, beautifully curated products in full size. And I feel like I'm getting this crazy secret value because the value of the fall box, for example, is over $275. And with my discount code of deliberations, it's $39.99. And so these are products I would not splurge on normally on my own, but they're so yummy and they're affordable this way, and the process of receiving them is so much fun. If you fall in love with these products, as I've done, you can take advantage of the members-only sale, which means you can get exclusive deals with these brands up to 70% off. So you can continue ordering the items you love. It's this fabulous way to explore and afford and receive really quality products. There's a whole FabFitFun community, which are so positive and encouraging. Whatever aspect of health, beauty, fitness you're exploring, there are products and people ready to make it a fun and uplifting experience for you. Sign up for FabFitFun today to get your fall box. The FabFitFun fall box is in limited supply, and these boxes always sell out. Use my code DELIBERATIONS to get $10 off your first box. Go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code DELIBERATIONS to get $10 off your first box. That's over $200 for only $39.99. Go to FabFitFun.com and use my code DELIBERATIONS to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box. Oof,
finally a bit of lunch. Not the best lunch.
What are we having to do?
You wouldn't enjoy yourself.
I'm sure it's fried, dyed, and laid to the side.
Oh, that's great.
Come on, Adelaide, let's go to lunch.
Oh, no, I'm not going to go today.
Why not? You've got to eat something. You haven't been eating very much, I noticed. What's going on?
Oh, this rich food is just so hard on my stomach.
No,
I mean,
it's really bad.
I'm used to salads and you know, veggies and...
I know.
I just, you know, and lean meats.
You're used to food, like me. I cook every night for my girls, and I try to, like, make lots of vegetables, and this jack-in-the-box and fried chicken, and my butt's getting so big. Now you see why I'm, like, doing those steps in the hallway. I'm just... Oh. I know what you mean. It's really messing your stomach up, huh?
Oh, yeah. My stomach just hurts.
Call a bailiff for, like, an antacid or something like that? Do you have anything?
Maybe that might help. I don't know. I asked the...
Maybe it's just the company you keep. I don't know. At lunch. Well, you know, that has a lot to do with digestion, too.
Yeah, well...
I mean, if I have to sit there and look at Bill one more time, scowling at me, I mean... I'm trying to do my job like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to weigh the facts and the evidence. And every time he looks at me, it's like he's got something nasty to say. Like, what's that about? And then I have to eat lunch with him, too? Like, I'm just stuck in this.
Oh, I know. And he doesn't really listen to you or anything.
I just want him to listen to the facts. He doesn't have to listen to me. Just listen to the facts. But every time I say, oh, the sky is blue, and look, he's like, oh, no, it's night. You're evil. Why am I vilified every time I open my mouth?
Wow. I don't think I heard that, but wow.
Are you serious? Pay attention next time. Every time I say something about a case, and I'm never saying anything other than that, but if I say something, he's like, oh, you're wrong, Harriet. You're crazy. It's like I'm Shannon or something. Like he thinks I'm Shannon. I am not his... She sounds like the most brilliant woman ever to leave him. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I have to admit that he doesn't even listen to me. And I think, I mean, I don't know why he doesn't like me, but I don't know.
Well, at least come sit next to me and have lunch. At least, like, you can be there, and he has empty, because he sits there and just stares at me. How am I supposed to eat my food if someone's just sitting there looking at you like, I hate you, Harriet. I don't even know this crazy man. I'm stuck in a room with him. It's been, what, 30 days now? And I just...
Well, it's certainly good that I sit between you and him.
Yes,
and
I just... Here's the thing.
Yeah.
You don't have to listen to me. You don't have to believe me. Just listen to the facts. And you would think that if just listen to the facts, we can get out of here sooner. It's like he wants to stay here and, like, pick an argument with me, which prolongs everyone staying here. Does that make any sense? He's just an ass.
Well, yeah. Well,
come sit next to me at lunch. So at least I'm not. He's going to sit next to me again, because you know he sits next to me at lunch. Notice.
I have noticed
and
that.
And he'll sit there and he'll hold the condiments, like, and make me reach over just to get the salt and pepper. Are you serious? It's the salt and pepper. It doesn't belong to him. It belongs to everyone.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I mean, you know that sounds petty. I know we're fighting about salt and pepper at lunch. I just, I can't take it. I can't take it. I can't take it.
Well, I can ignore him. So, yeah. I'll sit next to you. I can't eat anything.
Okay, well, don't eat. Just sit there and just be the buffer so that I don't get an ulcer. It looks like you're already starting your ulcer from all the food. Oh, my gosh.
Maybe they'll bring me in some nuts to settle my stomach.
Let's ask the bailiff, and maybe they have, like, an acid or, like, some kind of, like, Pepto or something, or some kind of what's that stuff called? Milk of magnesia? Is that what that is?
I don't know. Yeah, antacids would probably
better
help.
Better yet, let's just ask for a salad for dinner. You know what?
Ooh.
If you and I get together,
what a good idea.
We could petition for salads.
What a good idea.
Because we've had that for their food all week. And they're like skinny little people. We can't eat that. Let's you and I petition, do like a block for salads.
Ooh, oh, what a good idea.
Oh, here they come. Oh. We need to go to lunch. Come on, let's go.
Okay. All right.
Hi.
Bye.
The bottle of Rylatol that was prescribed by Dr. Carroll and filled the day before Ava died was for 25 capsules. No other Rylatol bottle was found, and Ava needed to have ingested at least 47 Rylatol capsules to meet the toxic level at which she died. The prosecution argues this disparity in number of capsules is another sign that she did not overdose by oral ingestion. Meanwhile, the defense claims Ava must have saved up Rylatol over a period of time. She'd had 4 previous suicide attempts and may have been planning this one for a while. Just one more ambiguous point in the debate of the barbiturate's method of entry. The prosecution's theory is as follows. Dr. Stowe conspired to use a lethal enema on Ava Michaels without her knowledge. The drugs were obtained by Dr. Stowe and administered knowingly or unknowingly by Ruth Ivanov.
An enema is a procedure in which liquid is injected into the rectum, typically to expel its contents, but also to introduce drugs.
Dr. Carroll, Ava's general practitioner.
Was it common for Ruth Ivanov to administer enemas to Ava?
Yes. Dr. Stowe told me he was in the habit of prescribing enemas for Ava, and Ruth helped him by administering these.
Why did Dr. Stowe prescribe enemas instead of oral medication?
He prescribed both, but his reason for prescribing the enemas is that he wanted to limit the amount of prescription pills Ava had in her possession.
Do you know why he wanted to limit the amount of prescription drugs in her possession?
It was Dr. Stowe's understanding that Ava had the propensity to abuse drugs.
Did you approve of Dr. Stowe's enema practice?
No, to be perfectly honest.
Why not?
I had just never seen that done before. Medicinal enemas seem a bit antiquated to me. I don't see the value of regularly flushing away good bacteria from a patient's colon in order to prevent her from having too many pills. If that's the concern, just prescribe fewer capsules and make her refill regularly. That was my thought.
Dr. Carroll, do you specialize in addiction or addictive personalities?
No, I do not.
Thank you. Did you ever share your concerns about Dr. Stowe's enema prescriptions with him?
No, I didn't.
Thank you. Did Ava ever share with you how she felt about enemas?
Yes, she did.
What did she say?
She told me she enjoyed them. She thought there was nothing better at nighttime. She felt cleaner and very sleepy after a barbiturate enema had been administered, and she slept very soundly.
Upon examining Ava's colon, the coroner was able to confirm that Ava had received an enema the night she died.
How many psychiatrists regularly facilitate home enemas for their patients? This is the first I've heard. Ava was a seasoned pill user. She understood how many pills it would take to put her in danger. That's why Dr. Stowe chose an enema as his means of murder. It's a lot harder making someone swallow 60 pills than it is adjusting the amount of liquid medication in an enema bag. By August, the relationship between Ava and Dr. Stowe had deteriorated. Ava was feeling used and neglected. She was feeling angry. She was intimidating Dr. Stowe and threatening to expose him. Rather than handle the matter professionally, he decided to take a more sinister route. Dr. Stowe swapped out one of the usual enema bags that Ruth Ivanov administered to Ava with one that was lethal. We'll never know if Ruth Ivanov was a witting or unwitting accomplice, but we know she did Dr. Stowe's bidding. On the afternoon of August 4th, Dr. Stowe was in Ava's bedroom for her emergency session. He would have noticed Ava's recently filled Rylatol prescription. The claim that he noticed it only after Ava died is false. He arranged for Ruth to administer a lethal enema to Ava. After it was administered, he waited for the call that Ava was dead. Then he rushed to her house, flushed her pills down the toilet, and called Dr. Carroll to come be his scapegoat. "What is this fresh bottle of Rylatol? It must be the weapon. You must be the culprit." Dr. Stowe spent hours contaminating the crime scene and misdirecting both the public and law enforcement. He thought he was smart enough to evade detection. He's not.
Madam Prosecutor, you should write for the movie industry. That was quite a yarn. Ava Michaels was suicidal. She was an addict. She had a history of abusing pills and using overdoses as cries for help. In August of 2017, she was fired. She was broke, and she was alone. She started August 4th with a call about selling naked photos of herself and quarreling with a friend. She was tired. She was angry, and she was morose. She asked her housekeeper whether there was oxygen in the house. She had to have an emergency psychiatric session. I am not minimizing her pain when I say this. But what happened that night was a cry for attention. She called her psychiatrist for a second session that same day and was denied. She gave herself one of her usual safe dose enemas to help her sleep, but it didn't work. It did not work. She couldn't face another sleepless night alone. So she took too many pills, and she called Paul Larson to tip him off about what she had done. I'm sorry that it's not a more interesting conspiracy-driven theory. I'm sorry this is sad. But the truth is, it's a self-inflicted death, ladies and gentlemen. It's tragic, yes, but it's simple. Dr. Stowe was Ava's friend. You will not find Dr. Stowe guilty of murder because the evidence simply doesn't bear that out.
This has been the busiest summer of my life. My third season dropped. I spoke at a convention with some of my podcasting heroes. I've been fortunate enough to be traveling. My sister had a baby. It's a lot. It's so much. So when I need healthy fuel fast, I know exactly where to turn. Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest delivers perfectly portioned cups of frozen organic fruits and vegetables directly to my door. Just add water or your favorite milk to your cup and blend or heat. If you're on a health regimen, which I'm always striving to be, Daily Harvest's new savory harvest bowls are amazing. They're this healthy dinner that's faster than takeout, healthier than takeout, and they have these new plant-based protein smoothies too, with at least 10 grams of protein. They're smooth and fresh and organic and satisfying. My favorite protein shake is the chocolate and hazelnut. They're easy, they're portable, they're healthy. Did I say they're easy? Because they bring them right to my door. They're so easy. Ugh. Go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code DELIBERATIONS to get 3 free cups free in your first box. That's promo code DELIBERATIONS for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. daily-harvest.com.
All right, that was a lot of, just a lot of information. Okay, let's just think about the main points. Okay, so Ava did not swallow pills, right? There were no unabsorbed pills found in her stomach. That's what the coroner testified, and also said that on the molecular level, there weren't any crystalline molecules or, you know, barbiturates found in her stomach fluid. So, like, these are the facts, okay?
Well, I think that the facts point to the evidence that she did swallow the pills. I mean, there's, you know, hemorrhaging in her stomach that was consistent with an oral overdose, you know. If Ava's a habitual pill swallower, she'd absorb that many pills quickly. I mean, we had 2 doctors state that the pills could have been dissolved in her stomach.
But they both have different views that conflicted each other. So that's so weird that we're not doctors and we have to sit back and determine, like, what part is right and what part's wrong. I think that's so confusing for us as lay people to sit back and go, okay, which doctor is telling the complete story. I'm sure they're both right, but there's so many conflicting views, you know? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I hear you in that.
But I had a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the testimonies of the doctors was that in the autopsy, she's doing the toxicology report, she says that Suicide was already mentioned in the report before they began the toxicology.
Which?
Is that normal that they list people's prior ailments or suicide before the toxicology?
That's,
it's kind of like, it's kind of like, who put that in there? And no one asked.
Well, they didn't say that. They said that, there was, she said she understood, the coroner said that she understood that there were 4 suicide attempts.
And they asked her, why does she know that? And she said, because it was in the report. And so my other question was,
in the police report, I think.
And they said, and he asked her, well, how did you know that? Because it was unusual to know that. She goes, it was already in the report. So how did they get a report about that? And aren't they supposed to just like look at the materials and go, this is what caused it? Not like, oh, she had some stuff before, so we should look for this. Isn't that kind of spin city like the doctor was doing before? Did that
influence? It would definitely influence her decision.
That's questionable.
Which doctor said that? I was kind of zoning out like halfway.
The female doctor about the toxicology report. She was saying that how they...
What was her name?
What was her name?
There were so many details. I mean, I'm actually having a hard time.
And she said that. She said it was already in the report.
So many testimonies.
So, and that was unusual because that doesn't normally happen.
How do we know that doesn't normally happen?
She said it. She goes, it was already in the report. We didn't determine that.
I know that, but we don't know if someone dies of a suicide, do we know that their previous suicide attempts are in the police report?
Well,
we don't know.
It had to be because the doctor said that was unusual. It was already there, and we normally don't.
She didn't say it was unusual.
Which
she said it was already there.
Hold up.
Does anybody else find it kind of odd that you consider, that you consider in the manner of death, that you consider the circumstances? I mean, like, why... why would suicide be part of the coroner's, you know, her past suicide attempts be part of,
exactly,
of the coroner's?
They're not supposed to be.
You know, and all the things that they mentioned that were considered, even when Dr. Solomon changed her view, I mean, it seems odd to me that some of those things were considered, like there being somebody else in the home. Mm-hmm. Somebody could commit suicide with somebody else in the home. I mean,
but you're right, Adam. That's your point. Yeah.
Not that I think she did, but I mean, somebody could with somebody else in the home. So how does that?
And she changed her diagnosis from suicide to undecided because she was told erroneously that this person was by herself in the house. And then she found out that she was not alone in the house. And so they had to change it because that does change things quite a bit. You're right.
It's reasonable to consider circumstances when determined somebody was killed.
Yeah.
How else can a manner of death be determined? If a coroner goes into a blind autopsy and sees a man died by blunt force trauma, whether he's found at the base of an avalanche or at a bar with a bat laying next to him, that's all material.
Yeah.
But Bill, you're right. You brought up an excellent point, and we very rarely agree on something, but I don't think you realize you agree for me. You brought up the point that, hey, you're supposed to go into a blind report. Clearly, they didn't do that.
Okay, you know, I think that we have to clarify a few things about what the coroner is supposed to do here. The coroner is supposed to determine manner of death, and I think that I agree. I'm not sure if I agree. I mean, it is a little confusing if a coroner is supposed to take in all of that other evidence of the case. I mean, aren't they supposed to just have a sort of a scientific view based on the evidence? I don't know, but I mean, I do know that the coroner is supposed to look at the body and take in and figure out, is it murder? Is this suicide? Is this accidental? I mean, that's what the coroner's job is supposed to do, is determine manner of death.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But everything is critical. It's reasonable to consider the circumstances when determine how someone was killed.
Mm-hmm.
How else can a manner of death be determined? If a coroner goes into a blind autopsy and sees that a man died from blunt force trauma, whether he's been found at the base of an avalanche or outside of a bar with a bat laying next to him, all of that is material.
Yeah, I agree with Bill. I think the coroner needs to have a decent amount of information to determine that manner of death.
But I think part of the problem is that the coroner was given some of the circumstances and not all of the circumstances. Mm. So she was given the fact that Ava had committed suicide or attempted suicide 4 times prior. But she was not given the information that there was somebody else in the home, and what was the
right.
other thing?
Right, so you're making the point that the coroner should have even more information.
Well, if you're going to give her part of the information, you need to give her all of it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
So are they supposed to determine just scientifically what caused the death? Or are they supposed...
That's my understanding okay, of what the coroner is supposed to do, is like look at the body.
Well, then that's immaterial then, because if you're looking at the cause and you're looking at the organ and the organ says liver failure because of this
pill
particular
overdose.
Barbiturate, whether she did a suicide attempt when she was 3 years old or yesterday has nothing to do with the actual evidence.
But I think
that this is here.
I think she also determines manner of death. I think that's
is it manner of death or is it
Manner of death. So if there's something suspicious in the body, given certain details that... So the detectives, they do speak with the coroner, and they give certain circumstances there so that the coroner, when the coroner is looking at the body, can understand if there was something suspicious. Like, so for example, there's pills, so they know to look in the stomach and to at least check that to see, you know, that's like a point of focus for the coroner. So... Yeah. I mean, that part is procedure, and that's normal for the coroner to get that type of information and to sort of, like, locate where they're focus their investigation of the body.
Who determines what parts of the body that they will test?
Because, they send it off to the lab.
Here's the question. If she has a history of barbiturate enemas that were inserted not through her earlobe or her armpit, but through her anus... or colon, why wouldn't they check that too?
Well, she had petechial hemorrhaging, which can be caused from chronic alcohol use. And from the calls that we heard earlier, she did sound drunk. And petechial hemorrhaging.
We didn't hear calls, we just have the testimony.
No one's disputing that. I'm just saying who determines what organs will be tested.
Well, definitely
it
not
should
us.
Be the coroner.
Petechial hemorrhaging can come and be the cause of an oral overdose.
That's true.
So those are the facts.
Yeah.
Petechial
so
hemorrhaging was
there.
Found.
Yeah,
they
I think.
Stopped there.
And that's why.
I think if we're going off the facts, then literally cause of death is just the overdose on the.
Well, that's
the
cause, but I think when we're thinking of manner of death, I mean, we're speaking
how
of,
they get there?
You know, was it a suicide? Was it a murder? Or are we still undetermined?
How did the drugs
you know,
get there? That's
those
the
three things.
She died. You're right.
Well, but okay, so we do understand that the coroner, so they did, when they did the autopsy, they understand that there was an enema given that night.
Yeah.
But let me go back to Bill for just a second, can I?
So we know how many.
He said the petechial.
Petechial hemorrhaging?
Yeah.
Okay, is consistent with oral overdose, but it's also consistent with chronic
alcoholism.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't mean that she overdosed. It could mean either that she overdosed or that she was a chronic alcohol user, and we know she was a chronic alcohol user.
And then the doctor never said, also, Adelaide, how long did that petechial hemorrhaging have been there? If you're a chronic alcohol user, abuser, and you know too, Bill, because you have
Absolutely.
Some alcohol problems, maybe you have petechial hemorrhaging
no
right now that we're not aware of. I'm just trying to figure out the timeline.
Maybe
right.
we could just start with the basis who, before this case, knew about what an enema was, how often they're prescribed, who has some, you
well,
know, history with
it. We're not experts on that.
I don't even think Dr. Carroll was. I mean, didn't he
That's
bring
right.
up something about, like, he didn't agree with the enema thing?
Yes, exactly.
I think at this point we just need to go off the facts. Like, there's a lot of hearsay stuff out there, and it's I don't know, I'm confused.
We were also told that Ava was happy when she was taking the enemas, and she preferred the enemas over
right.
the pill.
They helped
her don't you find that a little strange?
Hold on,
that she...
the reason for that was...
Who'd we hear that
with
from?
With the enema, she... We heard it from Dr. Carroll.
Uh-huh. Oh, Dr., okay.
But the reason she was happy with that was because she immediately had these barbiturates
in her system,
and so she was feeling happy. Of course she
and
was.
And it didn't make her sleepy.
They didn't have to make her wait for her to be digested. They entered her system immediately and took care of the situation so she didn't have time to
but
think
But she also had psilocin hydrate as well in her system.
Which makes it easier for Rylatol to work.
To affect. Yeah, yes, so yes. That was a fact. That's not speculation,
80%
that's fact.
80% of the lethal dosage. That's,
yes, and that's
a
psilocin hydrate.
That's
plus
huge.
The Rylatol, the pill bottle was empty that was prescribed earlier that week.
But we're
that
missing
she took
some pills, Bill. Where are those other pills come from?
And she also had an enema,
I won't even speak to hoarding. I won't even say anything like
I don't think
that.
It's hoarding, because I don't think addictive people hoard medications. Well, they take as much as they can until they pass out. They don't hoard the medication.
You can't assume to know how addicting people who are prone to addiction behave. So I just want to make sure look like,
right.
All right, we have to stick to the facts. And I'm actually as confused as you are, Mikey. I feel very undecided about whether this was suicide or whether this was murder. But what we do know, what we do know is that there was four times the amount of the toxic level in her system, which was three times the amount that would be necessary to cause an overdose. And she also had the lethal amount of salicylhydrate in her system.
80% of the lethal amount.
Which Dr. Carroll doesn't believe in prescribing.
And he doesn't prescribe. So Dr. Carroll doesn't prescribe
that. So that would have been prescribed by
Dr. Stowe.
Okay. We're on the same page.
No pills in the system. It doesn't say none of that.
Then how did they get there, Magic?
So we just have to think about the enemas. I mean, it had to have come.
Exactly.
And we know from the coroner that an enema was administered that night. Mm-hmm. We just don't know from
whom. I agree, Rose.
Did Dr. Stowe magically
appear? I mean, I don't think it's weird to get administered an enema. I mean, that's another way to receive medicine.
But they're usually used.
Protocol.
Good.
I think enemas are usually used to, like, if you're constipated, they'll make you unconstipated. At least,
or you want to absorb.
That's how they were used when I was young.
Drugs quicker.
She's a habitual user, yes, and she uses the enema right before she goes to bed regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So she obviously could not sleep, and we know that fact because of the phone calls that were made. At the time they were made, there's an empty pill bottle. So then the speculation comes into point, were the pills flushed down the toilet? Did she crush the pills up, pour them in alcohol, and drink alcohol? We weren't there.
But that's speculation. We can't speak for that because that was not like, I'm tired. I'm at a loss for words. We can't just speculate. We need facts. It can't be.
Well, I've reviewed the facts. Are we at a point that we don't know?
Oral ingestion is at best questionable.
Having an information enema.
I do think everything's like, I do think some sketchy stuff happened. Like, I mean, the whole, like, waiting 3 hours to call the police. I think that was sketchy, but like, at the same time, we weren't in that situation. We don't know how we would have reacted. Like, you know what I mean?
Mikey, is it sketchy to ask if there's oxygen in the room?
I think that's...
The point is, we're supposed to be trying to determine how the barbiturates got into her system.
Yeah.
There should be crystals there, but they're not. The other doctor says, hey, she would absorb them. Here's the facts. She's not here, and she's died of barbiturate overdose. So how did the medication get in her system?
Well, there's Dr. Stowe wasn't there physically to do it.
But he prescribed.
What if she
prescribed the medication, Bill?
Okay, but we don't have the level that he prescribed.
We don't have the dosage.
But we do have the facts that she had bruising.
Well, we do have the levels because she died because she was overdosed by three times the amount. So
you don't know the levels that Dr. Stowe prescribed.
One of the reasons that we don't know that. Hold on. One of the reasons we don't know that is Dr. Stowe was in that room for long enough to get rid of anything.
But you can't, that's hearsay, Adelaide. You can't say that
theory.
He was in there
but
getting rid of.
Yes, Mike,
but we don't have
theory?
We should have that, but we don't.
So yes, she got the enema and whatnot through her rectum, and they checked her stomach for pills, but really didn't find anything. Could she have just taken I know this is going to sound kind of like grotesque, but could she have taken like the pills and inserted them in her rectum?
Yeah, she could have done both.
Well.
Then there would be the crystalline molecules in her rectum.
Not necessarily, because
no,
it has
stomach digestion.
It would have had to have been over.
But Mikey, where'd she get the extra pills? Remember, she did not have enough pills in that house to kill herself.
That's where I'm at. That's speculation, though. We don't know.
She was an addictive personality, and they were so concerned about her having all these pills, and he's trying to give her an enema to make sure she doesn't have enough pills, and she doesn't have. Where the extra pills come from?
Well, she's so addicted. Like I said, we won't speak to hoarding. But again, me being a former alcohol addict, I used to keep a little fifth in my desk drawer. No one knew it was there, and they would come up with half parts.
But you would take it out when you needed it, right? You wouldn't hoard it. Hoarders keep things, and they don't give them out. They don't share them.
I would keep the alcohol for myself, and I'm not Ava.
We don't know what she had stored, but it's safe to assume.
The facts say that she did have bruising. Not bruising to where there was a struggle, but bruising to where maybe she was bumping around things
in
her room.
Inserting
that would do regardless of
because
how
he gave her barbiturate enema.
I walked into
barbiturate. She could be drunk.
I don't think
from a barbiturate enema
from alcohol.
from a barbiturate enema?
Well, I mean, I'm just, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words right now. I'm just like,
I mean, has anybody
zoning out?
Thought about that maybe she overdosed on pills and took an enema herself?
Like doing both of them? But I mean, that's the part about the abortion.
But it wouldn't have been through her mouth, though. It would have been in her rectum.
Isn't it funny that she had this big enema, but we have this time period where Ruth is doing laundry? If she had an enema and died at night, wouldn't there be like stained sheets and
no enema would be in the bathroom? I mean, that's something that you would be in the bathroom for that. The other thing
we need to consider.
She was also clutching the phone. We can't go off of hearsay.
One of the things we need to consider is the fact that Larson,
the friend,
the family friend,
Paul,
said that he was going to come over.
No, that was Ross.
That's right. Larson called Ross, and Ross said
Larson. Yeah, text Ross
because he couldn't go. Yeah,
he was going to come over. And Ruth said, no, don't come over. I've got it all under control. Now, she was not a nurse. She was a housekeeper. And
I thought she was a nurse, wasn't she?
I'm unclear, but
and she did housework as well.
Exactly, that's what I thought.
I don't even remember.
Hold on, let me look at my notes. She was assigned by Dr. Stowe to be in the home.
And keep watch over.
Okay, so I just checked my notes. She is not a registered nurse. She works as a housekeeper, but she has a history with working with patients with psychiatric problems.
Hold up. Okay. She's a housekeeper that gives enemas?
Under Dr. Stowe's orders, yeah.
Wow.
In my notes.
So she does have some previous history doing it, though.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem, okay? We get the phone call from Ross. I'm going to come over and check on her because I'm worried.
Uh-huh.
Ruth says, don't come. I'm here. I'm going to take care of it all. And then she doesn't go and check on her.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ruth did not check on her. But when you see everything else that Ruth does, you see her constantly checking with Dr. Stowe. As soon as she felt something was wrong, she called Dr. Stowe.
Who does she work for, Dr. Stowe or Ava?
Dr. Stowe.
I don't think it's odd that she would take orders from Dr. Stowe. I mean, she is an employee, you know, of Ava's.
Exactly. But she needs to take orders under somebody.
She takes orders from someone else?
Ava's not there to take orders from, so absolutely she'd go
paycheck,
to the next higher up.
And she's going
to
listen to someone else to tell her what to do? That doesn't make any sense. So if she gives you a paycheck, I can tell you what to do?
No, but they had a relationship, and they all. So I think she's comfortable enough to ask Dr. Stowe, you know, her next
move. Okay, but regardless of that. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, but regardless of all of that, it not being unusual for her to ask Dr. Stowe, according to her testimony before she died and...
Well, just her police report, what she told the police.
Yeah,
okay. Her police report. And according to Dr. Stowe, there's no mention of her calling Dr. Stowe when she has this call from Ross saying... I'm concerned. So
excellent.
The
point.
Only thing I can imagine is
don't say either. You're going to say that Dr. Stowe, et cetera, et cetera. Just speak to Ruth. Speak to what kind of person wouldn't go check.
We're not
supposed
let me
finish
talk about
telling
right.
you what
Ruth
I think.
Ruth isn't on trial, you guys. She's not even here.
Let me finish saying it.
Okay.
So there's only two possibilities that I can see. Is either one, she already knew that Ava was dead. And that's why she didn't bother to call Dr. Stowe at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Or number two, she did call Dr. Stowe, and Dr. Stowe said, don't check on her because we haven't given the barbiturates enough time.
We don't have the phone records for that. We don't have that information. We actually don't even have the time of death. All we know is that Dr. Stowe testified that he could tell that she had at least been dead for two hours when he arrived at 1:15, saw her body at 1:30 or whatever. So for 2 hours, that's what he said. So at 9:30 when Ross calls,
She wasn't dead yet.
She wasn't dead yet, according to the, if we believe what Dr. Stowe says, that's when she's, but we don't have the exact
what time did Larson
of death.
Call Dr. What time did Larson call Ross?
9:30.
It was a text. 8:30. A text message. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Larson got the call from Ava.
A text message.
Oh, okay, well, hold up. No, Ava called Larson at what time?
8:30.
And then Larson said, okay, let me call Ross because he lives nearby. At what time? He texted at what time? 9:30. So an hour, he waited. So Larson waited an hour before he texted Ross.
Well, he was talking with his wife, if I'm not mistaken, figuring out what they wanted to do. So that doesn't seem abnormal.
Let's not forget that the door does lock from the inside. Correct?
Yeah.
So, and we say, okay, well, Dr. Stowe was the last person to see Ava. Correct.
You do know I can lock this door from the inside and go outside and lock you inside. I mean,
are you thinking about, the point that I'm making is if you're in danger, if you feel that your life is coming to an end and it is not a suicide attempt, you can unlock the door and exit.
Maybe she was too loopy and that's why she had the phone in her hand.
Why would you not do that?
And remember, he had a 90-minute session with her earlier.
And that's maybe she was falling trying to get to the door.
She fell face first on the bed in the opposite direction, which had two doors to enter.
But she was loopy.
But wait a minute, you guys. You guys, I think you guys are coming. We're coming to a point which is actually, there's like a few contradictions here. So, yes, Harriet, somebody can, you know, lock somebody inside from being in a room, lock
last
it, and then last person, and then just shut the door. And so that's possible.
I do that on my front door all the time.
But also, Bill, I mean, what you just said, I mean, if, no, you want to say that?
She was coherent, yes, because she was talking.
Yeah.
But the door at this time is already locked, if it in fact was locked by Dr. Stowe, but you could easily unlock the door.
If you're calling for help, but your whole thing has been that Dr. Stowe is innocent, and so why wouldn't she? But so that's a contradiction.
She's
why wouldn't
not
she
calling
just open
for help. But
the
she's crying out.
Because she's calling, but if she's calling for help, why wouldn't she at least allow it for someone to help her, just like at least open the door.
Maybe Ruth.
I think she's calling for help indirectly. You know,
she's
I
don't calling for the phone.
That
but
exactly
why wouldn't she at
point.
Least unlock the door so somebody could come and help her?
It's
she
not,
has somebody in the house.
I mean, why would you ask for oxygen?
Yeah,
there's
and why
so
would you
many
lock
weird
your
things
yourself
about
away from the
Ava
housekeeper that gave you the enema. Why would you call her for help?
So
she's not going to come help her.
That, okay, so she doesn't want Ruth to help.
We don't know that the housekeeper gave her the enema.
No, the last person to see her.
We don't know who gave her the
enema. Dr. Stowe.
She could have gave it to herself.
We do know that she had an enema before she died,
which she could have administered herself. Or
that's
been
right.
administered by Dr. Stowe.
Yeah,
my
we know
point
it wasn't
is,
the nurse. I mean,
no, we don't know no, it wasn't no. the nurse. It could have been any one of the three.
So
that's not the issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that correct?
Exactly.
It could have been any one of the three.
Ruth had administered in the past, and she could do with that again. Dr. Stowe is he's trained. I mean, he can do
and
that.
And he's given her those before.
And he'd given those exactly. So we know that that is all possible and can happen, but we don't know what exactly happened that night. You know, I think the sort of like the problem that we're having here is that we are not qualified to determine which evidence is better than another set of evidence. The prosecution's and the defense, I mean, they're both saying different things about the evidence, and I can't judge which argument is more credible, which expert is more credible.
Yeah.
How are you guys feeling about this?
I feel the same. I mean, I am left not knowing one way or the other after the medical evidence which way, you know, I want to go. I don't think it helps any, and it leaves me confused.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I think the defense and the prosecution did a really good job of presenting the evidence, and they both did a very good job of both cross-examining and refuting each other's testimony. So I think we're at a, like, zero. Like, just where the other defense gained a point, the prosecution came in and canceled that out. So there's just not enough information here. And to be honest, I'm just a school teacher from West Palm Beach. I can follow the medical terms, but there's so many nuances to the digestive system. And one doctor says you don't have to have the crystals, and the other says that if she's in her, there's just too much information. I don't think we can even use it. I really
also,
don't.
I mean, the prosecution, they were saying that they were bringing in speculative things, saying that Dr. Stowe must have flushed the pills down the toilet, and we have no proof of that. I mean, I just don't really know what to say about it, and I completely second your point, Harry.
And the toxicology report. It's just not there. I mean, all the organs that we should have been looked at have not, and they're thrown away.
Because they were going off what the pills were that they saw rather than testing every single organ.
And I get that. You're right. Yeah. I get that. I mean, even Bill brought that up. But I get that. You know, if you're bit by a dog and you take the kid to the hospital, you assume it's rabies, you're going to get the dog and bring it. You got to bring the pills. I get that. But there are other organs and vital systems and medications involved that I don't think we have enough information. And I hate to say it, but I don't think we have enough.
Go ahead, Krasinski.
No, I agree with what you're saying, Rose. I think it's irresponsible to leave us with the task of figuring out, you know, who is right and who is wrong in these medical terms and situations when they themselves can't even figure it out.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Originally, only a blood and liver test were done. They said it was acute barbiturate poisoning due to a suicide. That was the original.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a change that came in. And there are really very few facts. We know that there was petechial hemorrhaging, which come from chronic alcohol use or an oral overdose. But they then said that there were no pills orally ingested.
So do we just dismiss all of those facts? Because if one expert is saying one thing and one is saying something else, which expert do you decide?
I know, that's the problem. We can't really be swayed in either direction. So it seems like we're all arriving in a middle where we aren't being pulled in either direction. Is that how everyone feels? Can everyone just raise their hand?
Okay. I would agree with that.
So if we're right in the middle, maybe we just don't, we just can't really consider the medical evidence as enough to pull us in either direction. And just like that, that's a conclusion that we can come to today. Right. Is that a success?
Yeah, it's not credible.
Is it too much to say that the system is flawed, that the medical professionals they're just not in the right here?
Well, I think also we're not experts, you know, like they're asking lay people to determine expertise, the system's flawed, but maybe not for the medical professions, but just like, I mean, maybe if one of us was a medical doctor or one of us, like we're not an expert jury, and they're asking us to be experts.
It would be one thing if it was the same expert giving the same thing, but it's multiple experts giving multiple assessments.
You would think we're talking about two different kinds of human bodies here, because one's saying, hey, this happens, and one's saying, sometimes it doesn't. And the other says, sometimes it happens in this case.
And that's sometimes that's speculation.
How are we supposed to know which one? Yeah.
Right. I think we've had very little successes up to this point in terms of like the whole table agreeing, but I feel like being undecided in this particular, or we're decided in the sense that we have all decided that the medical testimonies are not enough to go in either direction. We'll just, I mean, no paper writings. I'm looking at all you. I can see you. Okay, so I think that's sad as it is, we don't have a pull, but at least we have a consensus on that the medical testimony will not be.
We should make a list then of the medical stuff that we can confirm that we can use later on, if anything.
I think we should either throw it all out or, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because we don't, I would agree with Krasinski.
We're just not
going to
base it off the medical stuff, okay?
The problem is that that's just like a big part of the physical evidence.
It really
is.
But we just don't have that.
I know it. So here we are. So maybe the big part of the physical evidence that we just don't have, and yet all we have is a wonderful person that's no longer with us, and barbiturates that we don't know how
got there. We'll have to base our conclusions off of something else, then we just won't be able to do it off of the medical. I mean, there has to be
other medical assessments.
The medical assessments are not enough, so we're going to have to start thinking about other things.
Did the court give us other guidelines for making those assessments, since we've already thrown out like 80%?
So here, as for a moment, so here's the thing. We can make our judgment about whether Dr. Stowe is guilty or whether this was a probable suicide based on the evidence that is presented in court. And so if we just can't look at the medical testimonies, and we've all decided here today that we can't actually make a conclusive decision in either direction based on that, we're going to have to just consider the other things that were brought up in court. So we'll just do that, okay?
Yeah?
All right. Great.
All right. Okay.
On next week's episode, we're exploring the romantic history of Ava Michaels and her suicide attempts. Next time on Deliberations.
She vomited and wouldn't wake up. I called 911.
I can see you loved her very much.
I still do.
This woman was on the edge and he knew exactly which buttons to push.
Today's cast: jury, Cammie Middleton, Brandon Lamberty, Teru Hara, Tony Love, Chris Markle, and Becky Brown. Courtroom, Dan Lerner, Nora Fisher, Caroline Jaden Stussy, Sherry Effries, and Taylor Dillon. On the next jury break, we're speaking to an expert on jury behavior. Don't miss it.